May 2nd, 2023, 9:15 a.m. This is the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority, and I'll call the meeting to order. So thank you for all for being here today. We have a reasonable agenda, but I'm going to start out with something that's going to be really fun to do, and really I think it's something that some of you don't realize that Captain Bill Beal is with us today, and Bill will be retiring from the Greater Houston Port Bureau at the end of this month, where he served as president for 13 years. We have drafted a resolution recognizing him and expressing our gratitude for his leadership and contributions, not only for his service with the Port Bureau, but also for his 31-year career in the U.S. Coast Guard, including the command of the Houston-Galveston sector prior to his retirement from the Coast Guard and his second career with the Port Bureau. Bill, I just want to thank you for your advocacy, your service, your leadership in the Houston Ship Channel. Wish you the best in your retirement. The Port Bureau is a great organization that you have really steered very, very well, representing everyone in the port. And that's one of the things I think is the most important thing that we all can do, is recognize that it's not just Port Houston, but it's the entire community of over 200 different terminals in and around the port, and massive economic engine, lots of jobs, lots of issues, lots of very important negotiations, and keeping everybody happy. Wow, for 13 years. So I just want to thank you personally, and we have a proclamation here. What is it, a commit or a resolution that we're going to be framing and giving to you, recognizing the amazing work that you have done, the contributions that you have made to not only the port, but also to the region and to the nation with your service. So thank you, Bill. Would you like to at least give us some nuggets? What do we do from here?
I'm working on my golf game for
July. Oh, there you go.
That's what I'm focused on now.
There you go.
But I want to thank the Port Authority, really. When I got here 13 and a half years, the Port Bureau was stumbling. We needed the financial support from the Port Authority. That was definite. It was much needed. But equally as important, I think, was the fact that the other companies needed to know that we were in tandem, that we had your support also. So that was equally as important to me, was that they knew that we were working with you and that everything was as a community, you know. I remember one of the earlier meetings I had here, Charlie came in, and I said, so what am I supposed to be doing? And he says, you got to make the port better, faster, cheaper.
And he laughed.
So then I was like, well, I know faster, cheaper. I probably live in the cheap lane, you know, Coast Guard officer. But what was better, right? So then we thought about that for quite a bit. How do you make the port better? And we really focused on predictability. Mm-hmm. You know, that was became what we thought would make the port better. If the infrastructure that you're bringing with the new channel was predictable, companies would invest. And we knew that predictability would pay dividends and companies investing in the port. If we could get our data on the vessel movements to be more accurate, that would be predictable, and people would be locked in knowing that their turn time would be 20 hours or 24 hours, whatever it was. And now where we're going with the emissions with our programs and things like that, which is equally as important to the green space, so that predictability about how much emissions you would have coming in here and things like that. So predictability became how we make the port better. We've been working with you. I look around, a lot of friendships in this room and things like that. I'll miss it as I go. I'm not going anywhere. I'm just kind of going home to be grandpa and work on my golf game. So thank you for everything. Everyone supported me. I really appreciate it. Christine here, if you don't know her, you need to know her. She really runs the Port Bureau. We will have a replacement for me coming in 1 July, Eric Guerrero. He's Coast Guard captain. He was here for 8 years. He knows the area, was in command down in Texas City, and then made captain and went to New Orleans and working on the Admiral staff for 2 years. He'll retire this month, and then he'll join the Port Bureau in 1 July. So that's the plan going forward for the Port Bureau. But again, I, you know, in the dark days, the Port Authority really carried the Port Bureau. As you know, it started the Port Bureau, but it really carried us when I first got here. So thank you to you.
Well, we really appreciate everything that you have done, and we really appreciate a very smooth transition. It sounds like you've executed very well, which is really the most important thing you do at the end of your career, right? Perfect. Commissioners?
Yeah, Cap, you know, you and I have been close for a long time, and I saw you when you took the council over and what you made of it today, and it's great. And listen, I can't beat you in golf now, so you don't have to prepare for me. Thank you for everything you've done.
Congratulations, Captain. And we go way back, but we were with the Coast Guard, and you've always been there for the sailors in this port, and we appreciate it.
Anybody else?
Thank you. No.
Good job.
Thanks.
Just one note. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, Bill. The his last day, I guess, in public is at the Commerce Club on the 18th or whatever. We obviously are going to have a table sales pitch too. I think any of these other companies in here, if they want to come join in on his celebration, that ought to be interesting, to say the least. But as a board member,
you can say what you really want to say.
As a board member too, thank you.
Oh, yeah,
Bill.
Okay.
Enjoyed working with you, and thanks for everything you've done for the Port Bureau. So thanks.
Okay, commissioners, I need a motion to approve the resolution of the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority of Harris County in the honor of Captain Bill Deal. Retired.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Now I can sign it. Nice. Okay. All right. A couple just quick notes. The rankings for U.S. port rankings came out for 2022, and I'm happy to report that Houston has moved up two positions to number 5 in U.S. ranked container ports in terms of number of TEUs handled in 2022. So a major move.
Yeah.
Top 5, pretty amazing.
Huge.
We jumped from 7 overall as our imports and export volume reached record numbers in 2022. And we remain the fastest growing port in the U.S. in loaded imports and loaded exports. And now Houston now owns a 7% market share of the total U.S. container business. In 2022, we ranked 5 in loaded imports and 3 in loaded export containers in 2022, and that was reported by the JOC.
Pretty cool. I think it has to do with better, faster, cheaper,
and predictable.
Yeah.
What do you think? I think the a couple other things. Trans-Pacific was the top trade lane for loaded imports and grew 25.7% in 2022. And Transatlantic was the top trade lane for loaded exports, which grew 20.5% in 2022. And if you compare those numbers to any other port in America, I mean, we just blew them out of the water. And it really is a testament to everyone in this room and everyone who tried to make the port, you know, better. Faster and cheaper, and that is what drives business. I remember when I first started on the Port Commission in 2019, and I was learning a lot about the fire hose, about ports, and I got what I ultimately distilled was that cargo seeks the least path of resistance in the cheapest way. And so when you think about that, it's like anything else. We all try to find the best position and the best system that we can rely on, and as long as we keep investing in infrastructure, investing in our people and our technology, and we keep everyone doing well, moving up in their jobs and what have you, we'll still do that. So we always have to recognize that it is a competition and people are trying to take our jobs, and we have to make sure that we're vigilant and continue to make those investments. So congratulations to everybody who has and obviously has a major part of this growth, so thank you. Appreciate that. Okay, so let's go to our agenda.
Yeah,
absolutely. Commissioners, you want
the trip to Brazil?
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. Are you going to do that video?
You want to play it?
You want to?
I don't have it. I don't know.
Oh, it's not set up to do? Okay, well.
We made a trip to Brazil last week, and I've made a number of these trips, these trade missions, and this was by far the best one I've been on. And what I noticed as soon as we got there was this complete respect for this organization, Roger. Everywhere I went, and it was just obvious that Roger and Tom and John and their team had been working at trade down there. They knew everybody. We got the red carpet was out. I mean, it was awesome. So we wound up at a meeting at the governor's mansion, and the governor said, y'all need to go visit the soccer stadium. Well, you know, I don't think there was that many soccer fans in the group. And he insisted. So he got us like a presidential motorcade. So we go over to the soccer stadium, and we took a tour. That was actually very interesting. That's the largest soccer stadium in the world. It's like 200,000 people. But anyway, we're out on the field. And there was a bunch of school kids up in the stands, and they started chanting, America, America. I mean, it was amazing. So we walked over there to them, and one of the delegates said, we're from Houston, Texas. You would have thought we were handing out Taylor Swift tickets. They jumped up, they charged, they just stampeded at us. And then the mayor was there, and I got a great video if anybody wants to see it. But, I mean, it was just uplifting. And what I realized is we make important decisions around this table. We build the infrastructure. We keep the channel open. We do all these things. But we don't really think about the impact it has on the other end. And I realized we not only export cargo, we export goodwill, American values. And we export hope, and I saw hope in those kids' eyes. It was amazing. I tell you what, it was the defining moment of the trip, and I think it was the defining moment of my service on this port commission. So I just wanted to share that with everybody, and if anybody wants to see the video, I have it. We can put it on the website. I don't care. But it was a great experience for me. I don't know how everybody else feels about it, but John was right there with me. And, it was something else. So thank you, Chairman. I appreciate you getting up to share.
Sure. Any other? Yeah. Awesome. Okay. Let's move to C1, which is approval of the minutes from our meeting from March 20th. So that's all moved.
Thank you.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Staff reports. There you go. Roger, you're up.
Yes, good morning. Chairman, commissioners, and guests, and there's a few things that I want to hit at a high level, but we'll have staff reports to cover a lot more of the details about what's going on. There's a lot going on. Just a little bit further to Rick's comments about our rankings in 2022. Our level of activity through the first quarter is still strong as well, so the results of the cargo activities that we're seeing through our facilities, all of our facilities combined are solid. In fact, overall tonnage still year to date is up 4% across all of our facilities compared to last year through March. Container activity is still strong. Actually, it's up 3% in total for the year. Loaded containers are actually up 8% for the year. A lot of that's being driven by export demand. Which export container, loaded containers are still up 25-26% higher than last year through the first quarter. So a lot of solid continued growth and activity through our terminals. General cargo is down, but the steel remains relatively flat. It's only 2% less than it was last year. So all of this activity is tracking very well. I have to give it to our team of kind of how we forecasted in an uncertain world when we had to make this forecast 6 or 8 months ago. You know, it's tracking pretty well so far, so we're proud of that. And Ryan's going to give the operations report in a little bit, and he'll have a little bit more to share about what's going on in the operations of our port. Some of the recommendations that we will be recommended today for your consideration include various of the infrastructure and operations items, primarily totaling more than $30 million today in aggregate. We continue to prioritize our capital plans and investments in our assets to make sure that we have the assets in place that we need, but more so when we need them. So we're continuing to make those plans and investments looking forward. I think Charlie's going to give us a quick date. Well, if he wasn't planning to, he is now. Kind of quick update on Project 11, just real short, which we like to continue to keep people apprised of. And, you know, just again, just, you know, as our business remains solid, I'm very proud and thankful for our team here. They continue to deliver not only the quantity, but the quality of output each and every day that makes us successful and reflects on what we're doing. So with that, Chairman, I'll turn it back over to you, but everything's still going well.
Great. Commissioners, any questions? Okay. All right, moving on to appearances, public comments. I understand we have none today.
On Hollis, we have none.
Wow. That's scary. Oh, wait a minute.
Did you sign up?
No, I didn't know.
Oh, that's okay. We'll we're happy to.
Go ahead. I didn't get the sign up.
No, I'm sorry about that.
Okay, no problem. No problem. So why don't you up to the podium, and we'll just say your name and where you're from. Go ahead. Nice to see you.
Good to see you too.
Go ahead.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you so much, commissioners. I appreciate your time as always. Today, I would like to talk to you about the Port Infrastructure Development Program.
Name and who you're from.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know you, but
yeah.
Not everybody else.
My name is Arambi Treviño. I work as a public citizen. I'm a community organizer, and I primarily am a leading member of the Health and Port Communities Coalition. So I would like to talk about the Port Infrastructure Development Program grant that Port Houston is submitting to the Department of Transportation. The HPCC has a couple of concerns about how the grant process is happening. First, under the administration's Justice 40 initiative, grant applicants are supposed to address racial equity, environmental justice, and extreme weather mitigation. To effectively address these factors, consultation with community groups like the HPCC is supposed to occur, but currently has not happened effectively. We've requested information about the more recent grants. We've tried to be moved into the process overall, which I think would be ideal for us to have something that's consistently, you know, sort of we're checking in and finding out how can we help create a strong Justice 40 portion of these grants. We understand that the Port is applying for grant funds to expand our terminal capacity. Under Justice 40, the Port should be mitigating the impact to port adjacent communities from the increased drayage truck activity, for example, but have not, at least not to our knowledge. HPCC and our partners at EDS have suggested adding projects that could help mitigate port impacts, including stormwater projects, truck electrification, and an anti-idling campaign. But our suggestions have not yet been included. Reducing emissions by improving truck turn times at the terminals while ignoring the impacts the trucks will have on environmental justice communities does not meet the spirit or the requirements of Justice 40. As you know, Port Houston has already applied for a couple of other grants, and those have not been successful, and it is our understanding that part of the reason is because of this Justice 40 portion of the grant that can be strengthened. So for us, really, it's yes, it's about making the community voices being heard, but it's also about helping the port win these grants because they're massive amounts of money, and they were created, these grants were created to have a massive impact in environmental justice communities. So really the message is, you know, we don't want, it's not one of those communities asking for things. It's sort of like, how can we help you guys create a solution that's going to help both of us? Going to help strengthen the port by providing funds for new projects, but it's also going to help strengthen our communities, you know, again, by mitigating these factors that we all know happen around the port. So part of the process, right? The last thing I'll say is somebody recently told me, he said, because we were talking about, you know, issues in society, et cetera, and he said, you know, listen, you're not a victim, you're the solution. And I said, I could not agree with you more. And that's the way I view, I'll turn to the second.
Okay, go ahead.
That's the way I view my community, is we're not victims asking for what are you doing for me now? Which I understand, like, when you're in a leadership position, that's how it feels. It's not an easy job, and I appreciate what I don't do. So it's not what have you done for me lately, but rather how can we've been living under these environmental justice issues our entire lives, most of us. So we know, we've thought about all of the different creative ways to help these issues. So how can we help you guys? How can we all be part of the solution, essentially?
Absolutely. We have to be a team.
Yes, sir.
No question about it. So I'm sure our team's heard that, and we'll reach back out. Okay, go ahead.
Sure, thanks. My name is Naomi Yoder. I'm with Healthy Gulf, also with the Healthy Port Communities Coalition, or HPCC. So I wanted to talk a bit about Project 11. I wanted to let you know, and I guess give you a few updates about environmental justice regarding Project 11. The HPCC, in collaboration with Environmental Defense Fund, or EDF, and Lone Star Legal Aid, have reached out to a number of elected and appointed officials because our concerns about the toxic dredge spoils and diesel pollution from dredging has not been addressed by the Corps or the Port of Houston. At our request, Turner met with Colonel Blackman on April 14th this year to express his serious concern that the toxic dredge spoils from Project 11 should not be placed in the disposal areas located adjacent to environmental justice communities. EJ communities like Pleasantville, Galena Park, Channel View, and Pasadena are already heavily overburdened by air and other toxic pollutants. And the NEPA review done during the Trump administration was completely inadequate. The Corps' environmental justice review was seriously deficient and incorrectly concluded, based on faulty methodology, that higher-income white residents were going to be more impacted than lower-income minority residents. Also at our request, EPA Regional Administrator Dr. Nance met separately with Colonel Blackman to express similarly serious concern about the toxic dredge spoils and diesel pollution. Furthermore, Dr. Nance believes that the original environmental impact assessment should be revisited. New FEMA flood maps, NOAA rainfall intensity data, and sea level rise research published after Hurricane Harvey strongly suggest the need to reevaluate the community and environmental risks posed by Project 11. Recognizing the seriousness of the situation, it is our understanding that Dr. Nance, Colonel Blackman, and port officials have agreed to a site visit in the impacted communities with community participation. Lastly, the Healthy Ports Community Coalition, in collaboration with EDF and Lone Star Legal Aid, has sent a letter dated April 19th of this year to the Assistant Secretary for the Army for Civil Works. And we requested a meeting. The purpose of this meeting is to discuss the environmental justice and climate change concerns that were largely ignored by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers and the EPA during the NEPA process. So I have a couple of specific questions as well about one of the agenda items in Section H, which is channel infrastructure. So for Section H, number one, is that line item for Project 11? And where is the ocean dredge disposal site? We'd like to have some coordinates for that, or a map if possible. What is the cost for ocean disposal of dredge? And, you know, we acknowledge that that's going to be different depending on where in the channel the spoils are being transferred to the ocean, but we'd like to know the cost. And in addition, the over $92 million line item for approving a new budget, what was the budget before that, that's now being approved to. So those are the questions about that, and thank you for taking my comments.
Okay, Charlie, you want to address those two questions real quick?
Yes, certainly. So first off, the first question was about 81H1 Curtin Maritime, where we're switching some of the material from a mitigation site. The reason for that, first off, is that we're building oyster reefs, and the first time it's been done this way. We're using clay from the channel to build a foundation. Wasn't exactly sure how much material we'd need, and it's worked very, very well. We also have a strong push from the boater community to keep them at a certain elevation, not let them get too big. So we're taking the excess material offshore. It actually has an air quality overall improvement in our calculations. Apologize, I don't know the exact specifics, but we'll get those to the group. So it's seen as a betterment to the job and actually a slight reduction in cost. The cost had nothing to do with the driven. We had to do something with the material. This is the best place. The offshore disposal area, there's one of them off basically every major U.S. port. It's outside of Galveston. It's shown on all the NOAA charts. It's called the ODMDS. That's the federal name for that. We can certainly provide a map. It is on all the NOAA maps to show where that location is. It's the same location where the less beneficial material, some of the silts and things, are disposed of today. So it's already being used by the project. Going up to the next question, which is about Great Lakes Docks and Dredge, this is actually, to simplify, a clerical correction. So we have a Port Commission Authority, a PO amount, and a contract. Last October, there was a slight error where a contract estimate was put as the Port Commission Authority, unintentionally reducing the contract value. This is putting it back up to the exact same spot to fix that error.
So no new money, change in the contract, just a clerical error to fix the math.
Right. The other issue, just speaking of it very briefly, I can confirm the port and the Corps is working very aggressively on trying to answer the questions that have been raised by her earlier comments. I had a meeting with Colonel Blackman last Friday, and also a meeting with him the previous Friday after he met with the mayor and the EPA Regional Administrator, Dr. Nance. We are working on a joint visit, just as she described. It's going to be sometime in June. There's a couple dates that are being bounced around. Very difficult to get all those people there at the same time when they're available on their busy schedules. Simply, there's a lot of misinformation and miscommunication. The Port Authority and the Corps both believe we are in a good place. Things have been done properly, but it has to be communicated and shown very transparently. Those efforts are being made. The letter was 66 pages, full of technical conversation, and groups have been employed to evaluate and go through all of that as quickly as we can so we can have effective responses on the task. So just a quick update.
Okay. Thank you. You good?
Yeah,
now?
Thank you.
Okay, great. Anybody else? All right. Okay, so now we'll move to... the executive session F, and that is going to be Eric.
Yes, two things very quickly. One is amending our special service contract with HDR. We've had that contract in place for 12 years, and this is one of the things that we do for the region and the community. We work with the EPA on waste pits remediation. Several years ago, probably most of you know, a path forward was approved. The PRP. Now, believe that is not possible. They subsequently decided it's not possible, and so there is negotiation going on with the EPA to update the record of decision. Our engineers are making sure, to the extent we can, that whatever is the decision is based on good engineering practice, good science, and doesn't impact negatively the community. And of course, the reason we're involved is because we have an ownership interest in the ship channel, and it's important that pollution doesn't, you know, impact our own activities aside from the community. So that's what that one is. It's an ongoing matter. We need more money.
And that pollution was an industry pollution.
Now, what happened? It's a long story.
But it wasn't a port.
No. Long story. 60 years ago, there was a paper processing activity, and the byproducts were put into barges, and they were barged over to that site because of subsidence. That site has now sunk below the water, and all that, all those materials are now, have now spread in a larger area. That area has been identified. We've actually been working with EPA even before 2010 on this matter. It was byproducts of industrial activity.
Gotcha.
So that's that one. And then the second one is we've had a contract with AECOM for a number of years. They have, essentially, we think of engineers doing plans and things like that. They also have a consulting angle, expertise, and this is to help us revisit some of the, or work further on some of the analysis that the Corps does for the benefits of, of channel work. And so that's what that one is.
Okay. Commissioners, is that motion approval?
So moved.
Second. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, thank you. Captain? So we don't have anything in business equity. We do have channel infrastructure. Charlie, you're going to go through that. Before you do, though, I just want to thank you and Maria. Where's Maria? For setting up a really, really great business tour of the port last week. We had some, if you can imagine this, and some very prominent Houston business people on the Sam Houston who had never been to the port. And they were all shocked and amazed by A, how close it was, and B, how important it is to Houston overall. And Charlie did just an amazing job of communicating. It actually started in 1836 and brought them forward into where we are today. So Charlie, great job. You did a great job, and I appreciate that. And it was a very, I think, very productive meeting with people who really needed to know about the port. Go ahead.
Thank you, sir. Well, first off, and I'd like to add a little bit more information from what I was just sharing with one of the second speaker. We just got an email. The date with the EPA and the Corps and the visit has just been set, June 22nd. We got it during the meeting. And I'd also like to add that, in addition, this last Friday, we had a meeting with the EPA, the Corps, and the port. It was very, very productive. It was really centered around sharing information, committing to transparency, and listening to the community. And I really hope it will help lead us to successful discussions in June and hopefully get into some closure of how to move forward. So I'm going to start off with a very quick update on Project 11. Bottom line, the project is on schedule and budget. As you know, we've completed three contracts, and we have three very large ongoing dredge contracts. From construction only, that's about $530 million of ongoing contracting, and the progress is going well. And I'm going to discuss briefly each of those dredging contracts. Segment 1A was Great Lakes. As you know, they opened at the end of January for the channel. They're building an island. The island is having a few challenges. You know, building an island out of mud, it's a little challenging. We're working through those issues. More to come on that later. In terms of funding contract, we're 81% complete on the $92 million. Segment 1B, 2, and 1C, which we call so-called packages, but they're all done by two contracts. We have Weeks Marine, which is our largest contract in history at $323 million. It's at 12% complete, really marching along, doing great. They will finish the dredging to schedule July, August of 2024. And when they do that, we'll have the ability to extend the two-way traffic and the daylight restriction lifted all the way up through the Bayport Flare and into the Bayport Terminal. Curtin Maritime is our third contract. They're at 26% complete of a $93 million contract. They're building oyster reefs, doing very well, and they are actually agenda item H1, which I'm going to remove from my discussion because I just previously covered it. And other than that, just for awareness, we've always had a goal of having Project 11 finished by the end of 2025. The reason behind that goal is it brings $133 million of increased economic activity on top of the $800 billion that already comes off the channel. And that's, you know, 2.6 million per week, or 365,000 per day. So we have a lot of press to get the project done the right way. The port through the bay is on schedule. The Corps has some challenges with funding. It's not the Corps' fault. The Corps did not receive funding to keep on schedule in the 2023 congressional budget for the administration allocation. So they're behind. They're basically behind a year because of not getting that funding. We've worked with the Corps to try to figure out what we can do to recover. And right now, we're about 9 months rather than 12 months behind schedule on there. So assuming we get federal funding in 2024, in the upcoming season, the Corps will be finishing the last job September of 26. If we don't get funding, that will keep sliding. Because the Corps has already leveraged ourselves thoroughly to get the bay built, our highest priority. And with that, I'm going to switch to a brief update of the agenda.
Charlie, could you just give a little more discussion about what expanding daylight hours really means for people?
Oh, yeah. It's really big. So first off, the big ships can't transit at night, so they all wait offshore. A big ship might have very, very high operating costs, and it's sitting there not being used. The facility is often sitting not being used. So they all come up in the morning. So there's cost in the transportation, then there's also increased safety. Now you have all those ships bunched up, all trying to come into port and all trying to leave port as soon as it's daylight to save, you know, on their operating costs. So there's a lot of congestion cost. When the daylight restriction is left, the ship is able to go to the facility as soon as it's available. They're no longer having to wait, and has very, very significant economic consequences and safety and environmental, and the other benefits come spreading out the activity throughout the 24-hour day versus bunching it up a day.
And that's a result of the channel being wider so that you don't have the bunching up and the Texas chicken maneuver.
I was laughing when Bill said, better, faster, cheaper, because that used to be a driving point. For this project, for years, it's been wider, deeper, safer until we had a lawyer send us a cease and desist letter because Port of Virginia has now copyrighted that. Even though we do this a decade, I have, we are now switching to or considering bigger, better, deeper.
Okay.
We'll have a new tagline soon. It's all about that.
Perfect. Okay, sure. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, go ahead. Ask a question.
Okay, so going back to
So when will we get to the point, and I know you don't know for sure, of where we can benefit from the wider channel?
We already are. So we've already opened up about 12.7 miles from Texas City up through Redfish. The dredging is complete in that area. It's 1A with Great Lakes. It opened up in February. And actually, the pilots are reporting very good navigability in there, actually better than the simulators predicted it would be.
Good.
So it's working fairly well. We're very excited about it.
Great.
We always hope it does what it's supposed to. It's doing what it's supposed to, and hopefully a little more.
But regarding the next step, the benefit of the finish.
So the next step is when Curtin Maritime finishes some of their digging, when they finish their job, will be about at the end of this year. By the way, I also have to say, construction always changes. We have all of these jobs, but it's just like any battle plane. You go to war, you change. We move things around for efficiency. But on the present schedule, Curtin will open up about 3,000 feet in just January, and then the remainder, which is about 12 miles up through Bayport, will be open July, August of 2024. And Christine's group has a really cool map that we're sharing with all the customers that's online, showing when the segment's open, and we keep that updated.
Thank you.
Charlie, just to reiterate kind of what Clyde was saying, that what I'm hearing is that you've been able to maintain safe navigation in spite of all this dredging and construction, and that's a testament to your team, because it's not easy, and it's important that we keep commerce moving now as well as the future.
Absolutely.
And also, I think this offshore disposal of that dredge material is a great idea. I mean, everything I've been led to believe is that it's, depending on how far you have to go, but it's more cost effective and it's better for the environment. So I think it's all good.
Thank you, sir. And you brought up an important point I meant to bring up. You know, all of this is really based on an incredibly strong team. That team's led by Lori Brownell, a staff, and a very large team of consultants. And Lori's right arm is here, Leah Wilson, 17 years of experience in the industry. She's our HSC operations manager and a strong part of our team. So they're the ones that make all the rest of us look good.
And commissioners, I do think that if you have any interest of going out on the dredges, is very fascinating, and it's just interesting watching it. And Leah does a great job and a great tour of the dredges that are out there.
And you'll see some neat stuff. We have the cleanest dredge in America is working out there with Avalon. And also the Weeks Big Dredge has just done a complete retrofit for sound dampening, all these curtains and things, because we're getting near the community. We have a commitment of minimizing the noise impacts. All that equipment was just installed a few weeks ago. It's pretty cool. You get on one side and it's really quiet. You get on the other side and it's not. But that's exactly what we're intending to do, protect the community. So we're always happy to do those tours if there's interest.
Charlie, when you finish all of this, when we get to get up to Bayport, what kind of time element is that going to help from the time the boat shows up out there and time it gets up and out?
Well, I don't know exactly how to say that. So all the ships that are jammed up will now move whenever they want. I don't have a calculation of savings of X hours. What I can tell you, what we've opened so far is saving every big ship in and out that was daylight restricted an hour each way. So that's what we have so far.
It's at least an hour each way, but it's also, if they finish at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, they have to wait all night before they can go. So
that's
a substantial amount of operating hours that are saved.
Okay, going to the rest of the agenda, we have the normal pipeline or transmission licenses. I will only point out one, the very last one, H8. That is this tower right out here, the U.S. Coast Guard that they use for BTS. Today it has an old copper wire going to it. We're putting in a fiber, they're putting in a fiber to it. And we're requesting the commission, as is our tradition, to waive the roughly $15,000 licensing fee for our federal partner. It's enhancing the safety and security of the Houston Ship Channel. Happy to answer any questions.
Okay, it's our motion for items H1 through 8.
So moved.
Second. Any other questions? Yes, and Mr. Kloon is abstaining from the center point ones. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, perfect. Okay, John.
Morning,
back
Chairman.
From Brazil.
Yes, sir. morning, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Happy to be here with you today. It's very encouraging to hear the strong efforts that we make here in this organization on infrastructure and operational excellence. And that's what helps us drive our activities forward. Reinforcing the cargo base is really what it's about, and that's what those two things do. Last month, in the month of April, our trade development team conducted 25 tours of our facilities with companies such as Tesla, Walmart, Igloo, and Halliburton, just to name four out of those 25. And it's customers like that that continue looking and searching for Houston as their preferred gateway, as is the case with our trip to Brazil, which was a trade mission, putting buyers and sellers together. Importers and exporters are essentially buyers and sellers of products, and they make routing decisions. So it's important for us to be out there. Today, we have with us our three international representatives. We have one representative in Asia. Max Solomon is here with us today. We also have our European representative here, Anders Flinsberg. And we also have our new Latin America representative, Sergio Ojeda, who was with us just last week. So we're proud of these partners of ours located overseas because they continue carrying the Port Houston flag all over the world. I have two items for you today in the commercial section for your consideration. They're essentially routine real estate matters. One of them is approval for the Port Houston Credit Union lease. And to extend that for an additional 2 years. And the second is ratification of a month-to-month lease with Empire Stevedoring. And with that, I can take questions.
The motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any questions at all?
H two.
If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, John.
Very much.
Okay, finance, Finley.
Good morning.
Morning.
Three items on the agenda in the finance section this morning. I'll be brief. Item I want is seeking approval for a change of the small cap fund offered in the deferred compensation and defined contribution plans. The current fund has been on the watch list since Q2 of last year due to performance challenges and is being replaced with one of the top performers in that sector. We reviewed this and received recommendation for approval from the Pension and Benefits Committee meeting last week, I believe, or sometime in April. Item I two is requesting your approval of the 2022 Annual Comprehensive Financial Report, or ACFR, as completed by our controllership team led by Mr. Curtis Duncan. Great support by other teams in the division as well as really across the entire organization. For this, the port's external auditor has presented a clean or unmodified opinion on the financial statements, the PND fund financial statements, the OPEB plan financials, and on our compliance with federal and state grant programs. Curtis has supplied me with a final draft of that ACFR. It will be finalized when we sign the opinion letter for the management rep letter. We'll get an opinion letter, put it in, and it will be done. As you may know, we file or required to file with the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, by the 15th, which is just week after next. So thank you. You have your hard copies, and we'll send other electronic versions as well. Any comments or questions on that?
Approve one, two, and three. Salute.
Okay. Any questions? Second?
Second.
Questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Great, great work, guys. Thank you. Okay, Rich, you're up.
Rich Burns.
Morning, Chairman.
Good morning, Commissioners. Okay, there's a couple of updates since the last meeting. In terms of the four C's of our 2040 master plan, channel, cargo, community, and change. In terms of cargo, since we met last, we've had substantial completion of the Bayport-Port Road and expansion of the U-turn project, which alleviates traffic congestion, helps those trucks go faster, and emit less. Several design and planning efforts were completed, including pre-development, grading designs for port properties, permits, NEPA assessments, and these are all on the critical path for developing our assets for future growth. In terms of community and change, Port Houston sponsored the fourth annual Port of the Future Conference, which is really becoming a marquee conference for best practices exchange in the port industry. It had 80 speakers over 3 days, 50 ports, industry operators, labor attended, federal officials, and thank you to Chairman Campo and Commissioner Fitzgerald and Roger for attending and speaking. On that same vein, our Environmental Affairs Department with Community Relations supported two Earth Day events on April 22nd with Galena Park and one at Discovery Green, and also helped to plan and participated in a plastics pollution prevention symposium with TCEQ and the Galveston Bay Estuary Program on April 5th in Clear Lake. And finally, from a sustainability and grant standpoint, we did apply for the PIDP grant last week. That includes money for 42 acres of new yard at Bayport, plus 19 electric yard bins. There is not an EJ, strong EJ component there because the EJ criteria for every one of these funding opportunities is specific to the geography where the project is. And Pasadena is not an EJ community, and that's where it's located. However, we have made a strong argument that the reduced emissions from that project are going to benefit the airshed, which benefits all of the citizens who live in Shadow of the Ship Channel. We also submitted an application jointly with the Port of New Orleans last week to focus on a modeling system to look at the intercoastal waterway to help turn the intercoastal waterway into a green shipping corridor, which basically means decarbonizing it, making it as efficient as possible. Any other questions about port infrastructure development program?
So move 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
Okay. And a second?
Second.
Any questions or comments? Not all in favor, say aye.
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 Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, I think we have operations. Ryan Mariachik is here. Ryan? Good to see you.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. Happy to present operations section of the agenda this morning on behalf of Jeff Davis. Just to elaborate on Roger's earlier comments, a quick March recap for container terminals. Yes, volumes are up year to date in TU about 2.5%, but March volume was down. March 23 compared to 22, Bayport and Barber's Cut loaded TU down 1.3%, with empty down almost 8%, combined being down 2.3% TU for the month. Primarily driven by import loads and export empties down 9%. The good thing is this was a surprise to us. This was part of our forecast, as we've expected some softening in the market that other gateways have seen for some time, and it's finally starting to hit us. On the upside, export loads continue to be strong, up over 10% per month. So that's a good indicator. So with all that, you know, you'd expect softening areas of all activities at the container terminals, including gate volumes, gang hours on vessels, and overall container yard density. But with that, our vessel anchorage delay continues to be essentially non-existent, as it has been since the beginning of the year. Minimal delays caused by volatile vessel arrivals. General cargo tonnage down 18%. Primarily related to coal, grain, and steel. Steel, the primary driver of activity here at the Turning Basin, was down 2%. And again, this was forecasted in our budget, so not a surprise. We need to remember 22 was a record year, 23, even in the view of what March has looked like, things still remain solid for the year. I wanted to highlight a few things of activity over the month. This past Saturday marked our last standing Saturday gate at our container terminals for Bayport and Barber's Cut. This suspended a one-year program aimed to provide additional hours of service to the trucking industry and the industry as a whole to provide additional hours of service for delivery of exports, pickup of imports, and empty transitions. Unfortunately, this program just never gained traction, and Saturday gate volumes flatlined, while through the volume surges of 22, our gate transactions and volumes overall were just exploding. The good news is truck turn times year to date are sub 45 minutes, with much less volatility in that area. We're involved with customer stakeholder outreach at all levels to say, what's next? We've experimented with evening hours. We've experimented with a 6 a.m. gate that's still in place and is very effective. We want to be open for hours that are highly utilized, and we're going to figure out what that means in the future. Last month, we had a driver address this body, and they cited entitled drivers, choke points, and proposed improvements to our facilities. I'm happy to tell you all that we were able to contact this individual directly. We had a lengthy discussion about our current processes, why we do what we do, why our facilities are set up the way they are, and plan expansion around certain choke points. We also provided a full overview of all the technology that's available to the community and all of our user groups, including our Lynx platform, our mobile application, the trucker hotline, and our pre-advised express pass program. We further offered to host the individual on site, go into further detailed discussions about issues that they had experienced, including company reps if they would like, but the driver declined. That invite remains open to that individual, and really any of our users. We've since received feedback from other terminal users that we have since initiated a safety and communications plan, which is a cross-functional group across many divisions of the organization, to better educate all terminal users, including seafarers, the ILA, stevedores, contractors, truckers, and so on, of the expectations that we have of anyone that comes into our gate. Most importantly, we want everyone to feel safe and have a positive experience while they're here. At the end of the day, we all have that shared goal to make Port Houston the premier gateway. So, lastly, we're in discussions with ocean carrier customers and the railroads to resume on-dock rail service at Barber's Cut. Don't have anything to share specifically on service, but we think that something is imminent in the next few weeks. I'd like to highlight a few agenda items. L2 is to award a two-year contract with H.A. Hurd Jr., DBA Relidyne, for the purchase of unleaded gasoline and ultra-low sulfur diesel fuel for our facilities in an amount not to exceed $22 million. This is obviously an essential supply for all of our operations at our terminals. It was used by the 116 RTGs that we have, with an additional 26 on order, 470 vehicles, 62 yard trucks that support container movements through our facilities. Diesel consumption by the fleet is currently at 55,000 gallons per week, and this is as high as it's ever been, given the operations that are currently in play. L4 is an award to Coney Cranes, the sole source provider for the purchase and installation and commissioning of hardware for auto steering of our rubber tired gantry crane at Barber's Cut Bayport. A little background on auto steer. This is a system that's equipped on 39 of our 116 RTGs. And what this does is it allows the skilled ILA operator to focus on the physical lift of each container, maintain a safe working environment, and it keeps the crane on track as they travel up and down the RTG blocks. It also assists that inform decreasing cycle timing and making the operation more efficient. So the award is actually for the replacement of obsolete base station hardware, servers, and antennas to make this system functional. And lastly, L5 is for the purchase of 35 vehicles for Caldwell County Chevrolet for various divisions through a local government co-op in an amount not to exceed $1.9 million. As a note, EVs were evaluated in this purchase but are not included due to price and availability constraints. Look forward to any questions or comments you may have on those items.
Go ahead. Ryan, can you give us an update on the 6th and 7th, when they're going to be open, how we're doing with the new terminal?
Wharf 6 and 7 at Bayport.
Right, Bayport.
Yes, sir. So Wharf 6 is under construction, targeted for completion by August. Cranes are being shipped here in the coming weeks to start the 72-day journey. So we're looking for a full commissioning of Wharf 6, including the first three ship-to-shore cranes, followed by September. The good news on that is also there's a subsequent three ship-to-shore cranes that are coming to be delivered sometime in the late first quarter of next year. Wharf 7 construction is on the street for award. Don't have a construction start date yet. We're working with Charlie, Leah, and the P11 team to make sure that we can fall in line with the pre-work that needs to be done in that area to coincide. But it's safe to say that that will begin this summer for an estimated two-year project, which will include the foundation for an additional four ship-to-shore cranes.
So when six is complete, how many 14,000 ships can we get in a day? Can we have four, three?
When six is complete in the first phase, we can have two And then when the new cranes come in, the second set of three, we could have up to three.
I'm talking about the whole terminal, not just six. The whole terminal, we could have how many?
Four.
Okay, great.
Depending on vessel size configuration.
Are you talking about the 14,000?
14,000.
Right, which are, what's, is that a 1,200-foot ship?
Yeah.
You got 5,000 linear feet, right? And nominally, the post-Neo-Panamax vessels are 1,200 foot long, so.
So that's really where we all know that's our future.
Yep.
I was at a meeting just the other day with some carriers, and Houston is in their plans to get to the 14,000, get the smaller ships we're working today will be taken out of the market.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's good to hear that we can dock four in one day once we get six done. Okay, great. And I want to say this. I've said it to you, Ryan, many times, just personally, but I'm going to say it publicly. You've done a hell of a good job. It's a very difficult times running those container terminals. You did a great job.
Thanks, sir. It takes a team. And there's a lot of us that are marching towards the same goal. We're fortunate to have a great partnership with the ILA, make sure that all the work we do to plan and manage the day-to-day is executed effectively. And I'm proud of the work that we've done.
Thank you.
Good to be, for sure. Okay, is there a motion on these items, the L1 through L?
So moved.
Okay.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, perfect. Thank you, Ryan.
Yes, sir.
Okay, people, we have no items. Security, we have no items on technology. Okay. Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioners, Technology Division Section O has two items on it, both related to our current Oracle JD Edwards platform, and they're for maintenance of our software, subscription software, as well as our Oracle Cloud. We're hoping to realize a cost avoidance of nearly $60,000 to $70,000 year over year. We'd ask for your approval of these two items.
The motion?
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I got it. Thank you. Okay. Next item is our executive session.
Do you want to take a break before we do it?
You want to take a break? 5 minutes.